We follow Jesus through a world filled with people who don't. Follow him, that is. Now, we care about him and we care about them. So, we are for Christ and culture. From Criswell College, here's our very own president and professor of humanities, Barry Creamer.
On today's free-for-all, we have stories about robots, rangers, and rabbits. Okay, well, that's not quite true. It's not rabbits. I just really wanted it to alliterate. It's about a different kind of animal, so whales. but they're
There's
animals.
Gotta
they're
be
both
an
mammals.
R word.
They're
There's
both mammals.
Okay.
So what's the R word?
I don't know what it is.
For a mammal that lives underwater.
Yeah.
I couldn't find one, so I just went with rabbits.
Rain-free mammals. Because they never get rained on because they're always under the water.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay, so anyway, I'm joined, obviously, by Dr. Waddell, Joe Waddell. Nice to have you in the studio
Great
today.
To be here. Thank
Dr.
you.
Dr. Jeff Campbell, nice to have you in the studio,
Thank
Jeff.
Thank you. Good
again.
To be here.
And Daisy Reynolds, our producer and also contributor.
Thank you.
Nice to have you with us. Daisy, I guess I'll let you go first with your article.
Okay. Today. So my article was written by Kate Darling, and it was an article in a magazine called Spectrum, which is from the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers. And the article is called Children Beating Up Robot Inspires New Escape Maneuver System. So this is already where it's not sounding good. Children are beating something up. So researchers, Japanese researchers from a university laboratory in Japan, patrolled a public shopping complex in Osaka with a robot. And I think it's pronounced Robovi. Robovi, or I really don't
I
know how
no
to say
idea.
It.
I just call him Roby because it sounds cute.
Oh.
And the poor guy gets beat
okay.
up.
So. Yeah, I know.
Not to be a spoiler here.
No. So what happened is they would have him just rolling around, and when someone obstructed his path, he would politely ask the human to step aside.
Hmm.
So he was just minding his own business, walking through the mall. He'd come up to a human and then he'd, excuse me, can you please step aside? And in Japanese, of course. And so what they found, and they had videotaped the, you know, as they were traveling around. At first, the children would just step inside in front of the robot and the robot would ask the child to move. And then the child would say no. And then it would repeat no. And then it would become feistier as the time went on, especially if there were other little munchkins with it. Okay. So at first they just said, no, you can't pass. But then they started to hit and kick and beat it with whatever they had in their hands. And then at one point, this just made me sad. They grabbed his head and bent his neck. Like that's yeah. pretty violent,
yes.
you know? And they also called him bad names. The poor little guy. So researchers, I thought this was pretty humorous. So researchers saw that this was going on and they decided to create an algorithm that would help him evade abuse.
Yeah.
So what they did, it had to do with the size of the human. So whenever the robot would notice that there were tiny humans nearby,
yeah.
especially
Less
if there
than
were
1.4 meters.
Okay. So if there were a group of tiny humans, then it would realize it and it would run toward a taller human. Okay. So because it noticed that children didn't beat him up when there was an adult present.
That's right.
But when there was no adult that sort of belonged to the group of children, then the children would abuse the robot.
Lord of the Flies.
So the robot would notice everybody's height and it would say, oh, this looks dangerous. I'm going to go over to those adults. So that's what happened. And later they talked with the children that had beat up the robot. And 74% of the children did describe the robot as lifelike.
Hmm.
And yet they beat him up anyway. You might have thought, oh, well, 74%. Surely if they think he's lifelike, you know, they're not going to hurt him. No, that didn't stop them. They thought he was lifelike and they still bent his neck over. Just devastating. So I wanted to see what you thought. What do you think, Jeff?
Well.
Jeff's kids beat up robots every day.
Well, it started off with this initial study where they're like, they gave the kids a Barbie,
yes.
asked them to hold it upside down on its head. They had no trouble. With a hamster, they had trouble because the hamster struggled.
Yeah, and they knew it was hurting it, maybe.
And then, this is weird that they were.
A Furby, you know, because it has these human-like characteristics
yes.
of speech and the eyes move and things like that. They had a harder time with that. So, but, you know, the thing is, you know, spoiler alert, robots are not humans, number one. And kids are not idiots by and large, okay? So kids see this, I think, as a toy. So I'm gonna come to the defense of the kids. So number one, why does the robot go through the mall and ask people to move? Why doesn't it move? When I walk through the mall, so when I walk through the mall, if somebody's in front of me, I don't stand there and say, could you please move? I adjust my path to avoid people. And so these kids are walking around and here comes this robot and the robot says, would you please move? And that's probably, to me, that would be interesting for a kid to stand there and say, no, I'm not going to move. And so anyway, I don't know about, you know, kids are kids in a sense and robots are not people. And so that's what I think about the article.
Okay, Joe.
Well,
weigh in for us.
Okay. I loved it. I had a blast. Let me just read to you a couple of lines here.
Yes.
Gangs of unsupervised tykes repeatedly punching, kicking, and shaking a robot in a Japanese mall. Children were sometimes all too eager to give the robot a hard time, particularly when in parks and unsupervised, the youngsters would intentionally block Roby's way. They'd get violent, hitting and kicking Roby. They also managed some verbal abuse. And then finally, let me one last thing. One of the little brats decides to pound the robot's head with a bottle.
So, yeah.
You know, I think at one point the author said, you know, we worry about this because it may indicate how we treat humans. And this is Dr. Creamer's argument with how we treat animals.
Sure.
He refers to animals as, what, furry machines?
Fleshy machines.
And
I'm
so,
Cartesian,
And you're going to get lots of hate mail
People
again every time.
Every time you say it, thanks for bringing it up.
And I noticed you're bringing it up, Joe.
Yes, my email address is jwoodell@chriswell.edu.
And so it's not that, and Daisy, you even mentioned that you were sad. You got so sad when this happened. What made you sad about it? Were you sad for the robot? Because Dr. Creamer's going to be sad for the kids in our society.
No, I was sad for the kids because it's
you
give them one moment. You give them one moment of unsupervision, and they break out in this mob behavior.
Yeah. Well, when I was reviewing this article in my office, and our one of our facilities guys, Darren, came by. Remind me of Darren's last name. He can get credit for this. Darren, I don't remember Darren's last name, but he works at our college, and I ought to know that. Right. He's a great guy. And I was telling him about this article. He said, you know, there was a story about a robot that went around the world. And it got in all these different cities, and he finally got to Philadelphia, and he got beat up.
That's right.
He didn't make it any farther. Well, they mentioned that at the end of your article.
Mm-hmm. And they said, wow, he would never have made it around the world if there were nothing but children.
That's right.
Because he would have been.
So I do worry about kids bullying when they get together and doing strange things, you know, bad things when they get unsupervised. Yet, I totally understand Dr. Campbell's arguments. And
So, well, I mean, that's
we
why
ought to be concerned about children and how they behave.
I think the experiment being with a robot is because of what Jeff was saying. We do recognize the robot's not actually suffering at the hands of these little brats, as the article said. Not me, but the article said that.
Darren
was really
Darren Lockhart. Sorry, Darren.
Yes, of course, Darren. Yeah. Anyway, Darren's hilarious. Anyway, so this is first of all, I do want to say, I mean, it's children and not adults for the very reason that we enculturate and civilize our children with morality. Mm. That they're not born with it, but that's part of what this reveals. And there is a difference. I get Jeff's point is right. It's just a toy, but why do children beat up a toy?
Yep.
It's not like they walk around beating up plants, so you're looking for something to take out aggression on.
It's not their toy. I mean, they ought to have some kind of respect for other people's property
and all that kind of stuff. And I do get it that, you know, the robot could have gotten out of the way, but I think that's the point. When I'm a nuisance to you, how do you handle me? That's the question that we're trying to ask. And so in that question, I know people who, by the way, Daisy, you were mentioning the algorithm that they developed to avoid being beaten up.
Yes.
And so the algorithm is if you see people who are under four,
if you're under 1.4 meters,
you're dangerous.
Go the other way.
If you're under four, so there's a group of 4.5 footers.
Run away. Run away.
I know people.
Go to big people.
I know people whose entire lives are defined by that algorithm. I do. It's not running away from children. Well, I do know some who just run away from children, but it's running away from violence or threat. Mm. I know really intelligent people. I mean, smart people who basically say, look, the whole guide to my life is to avoid being beaten up by other people. I also know intelligent people who've looked at history and said the whole nature of civilization is all the old men keeping all the young men from beating everyone else up.
Wow.
That's another historian's view of what it was about. Anyway, I'm just saying, I think this reveals a lot of, so, you know, some people would say xenophobia. They beat up the robot because it's more different from them than something else. I don't agree with that. I do think it reveals something about the misanthropic nature of human beings and that we have to be taught to be respectful of other people.
Yeah.
And part of that does get extended onto other objects. So people normally beat up other objects. You know, they destroy other people's property, and then they hurt animals, and then they hurt other people. It's just the trajectory that it goes down. So you want to stop that in children by teaching them to be responsible with other people's things, other people's animals or their own animals, and then other people as well. So
and when there are no authority figures around, we tend to do things we ought not to do.
I agree, but notice that the authority figures have been enculturated. They have been civilized. Yeah. They have been taught the morality. And so that's why it's the children. I think the thing people think is, oh, well, children shouldn't be like that. But that's because they're being Wordsworthian. They think children arrive on Earth with a heavenly sense of divine, you know, compassion
goodness
or something.
And we mess
they
them
don't.
Up.
They arrive fallen, and they have to be taught the morals. And that's why as people get older, they then restrain the children from beating up the useless toy, as Jeff was pointing out. But still, useful, at least in the experiment. I thought that was really interesting. It was a great story. Jeff, how about yours?
All right. My story centers around Kristen Grist and Shay Haver. These are the two women who were the first two women to go through and graduate from Ranger School, which is the Army's elite training for their special forces. And there's a story here about Representative Steve Russell. He's a Republican congressman from Oklahoma. He requested the documents that were associated with their time in Ranger School because shortly after they graduated, the statement was, you know, they went through Ranger School. Everything was the same for them as it was for everybody else. And there were some rumblings that that was not the case, that there were some allowances that were made and some things that were changed on behalf of the fact that they are they're women, and there's differences there. And so the idea is he wanted to get to the bottom of that. He found that the documents had been shredded. There's no real, you know, the claim is, well, those documents weren't meant to be kept. But you would think that the first two women to go through Ranger School, that would you'd want that to be well documented and wouldn't
and
be
it's within weeks
shredding
of
a lot
when
of,
they
yes,
graduated,
yes,
right?
Within weeks of when they graduated. So my question would be, are we in favor of changing standards in certain areas so that we can be more gender inclusive? This would bring that up to light. And I'm going to ask Dr. Waddell, you are former military as well.
That's
so
true.
What do you think about this story?
I mean, I just can't imagine having different standards for different genders in Army, Ranger, school, and the jobs that they do. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. Why would you do that? You've got to have people who can do a job, who can carry out a mission. And if the people in charge who have been on these sorts of missions think that certain thresholds, certain hoops need to be jumped through, maybe literally, certain heights maybe, then the standards can't be compromised.
Right. So, yes, Daisy.
Yeah. You know, it does sound kind of fishy, the situation. And it seems incredibly unlikely that the first couple of women to go through the program that they wouldn't document that process. Plus, I mean, since when does everything stay on paper? I find it hard to believe that they wouldn't have kept some of those scores and things in data systems, you know, that they use. So it just does sound like they're trying to not answer the question. Now, that doesn't mean that the answer is one way or the other. We don't really know what the answer is. But I don't know. I think I agree with Joe. I think for certain duties that, you know, take a lot of expertise in physical ways, if you can't, what is it, cut the mustard? Is that what you do? Then, you know, and maybe some women can, but, you know, if the majority can't, I go ahead, Jeff.
And not only just certain duties, but certain job descriptions. I was reading a job description a few days ago for a president of a college at a Catholic women's university. And they specifically said, we're looking for a Catholic woman to be the president of this Catholic woman's university.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's perfectly, they're within their rights to do that. So there are certain jobs, certain requirements where gender is an important matter.
Right.
And something I didn't mention, let me just mention this, because Representative Russell is a former Ranger. Oh. And so he's not just trying to stir up trouble.
Oh.
He has an interest in this because this is what he has done as well. So I wanted to mention that because that's a great accomplishment. So I neglected to mention it earlier.
Mm-hmm. I would just throw in here so I think there is a presumption on the part of people that if they shredded these documents intentionally to keep them from getting out, then it would seem, based on the motivation of the investigation, that they're trying to cover up the fact that they somehow tilted the scales so that they could pass.
Maybe the women outscored all the men.
Well, that would
be really embarrassing.
I doubt they would shred that. Yeah. But I get what you're saying. I just want to, on that presumption, I still want to say I don't want this to be heard incorrectly. I wouldn't even be suggesting that these women couldn't beat the living daylights out of me. So I'm not.
That's
suggesting
right.
that they're not tough or haven't passed some incredible things, and you wouldn't have to be that tough to succeed at what I just said. I'm just saying, I'm not trying to diminish what they've accomplished. It's way more than I bet almost anyone else can accomplish.
Of course.
The Ranger School is unbelievable. Now, you've been in the Army, Joe, and you're Marine,
yes.
Jeff, so the whole background of that is not in me. I wasn't in the military. I kind of miss that. I kind of wish I had that in my history, but I don't. And so I'm assuming for you guys, this probably – so here's my case, and I want to – you guys would know more about this than I do, so I don't want to speak as an outsider in ignorance, but it looks to me like the U.S. military ends up being sort of this hothouse of social engineering experimentation on a regular basis. So we're going to – and sometimes in a good way, but sometimes in a bad way. We're going to force this thing we want to happen throughout society to happen in the military. And so I think it reveals the dangers and pervasiveness of social engineering if it's the case that you compromise a standard so that you can have a, you know, inclusive sort of Ranger school.
Right.
Yes.
Well, there's always been limitations in the military. When I was in the Marines, there were female Marines and male Marines, and they had different physical standards. Okay.
Probably had different jobs.
Yes.
Right?
A chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And so even within the military, there are different jobs that you have to ask yourself, who is better suited to fulfill these things? And so frontline combat is about aggressiveness. It's about strength. It's about these different things. And so they design those jobs and those requirements to fit that mentality. And so I'm in favor. If there's a woman who can go in and do Ranger school and be there with the men and do everything they're doing, let her be in there because that's good. But if we have to release or take the standards back, then you're weakening a whole range of individuals within a job.
And if I hear you correctly, you're saying don't change the standards to keep women out or put them in. You're
exactly.
saying just put the standard there and let the best person be the
exactly.
person who qualifies.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, Jeff's going to say, hey, if a woman wants to try out for professional football, let her try out. I mean, whatever it is, or high school, anything else, athletics, whatever.
All right, very simple. All right, let's go to your story, Joe.
So my story is from an Associated Press article about how that SeaWorld, not all the SeaWorlds, like down the one in San Antonio, but in San Diego, they're going to get rid of the orca killer whale tricks that they do. Instead, they're going to display these whales in more of a natural environment. And the article really isn't taking a side. It's just saying that this is going to happen, and there are people on both sides of the issue. And sort of the naturalists, the people who are more into animal rights, are saying, oh, this is just a show. You're still keeping these orca whales in captivity. Great. You're not going to make them do tricks anymore. That's great. You know, let them go back to their natural environment. And so I kind of tend to agree with the tree huggers on this.
Whoa!
I mean, I have always... I don't like to go to the zoo. I hope my kids aren't listening tonight, but I really don't.
For that reason.
Yeah, I don't like to see animals in captivity. I would just...
Wow!
So...
I'm dumbfounded.
Yeah.
I'm falling out of my chair. I can't... I'm not because I think you're wrong or anything like that. I'm just surprised to hear you say it.
I just don't like to see animals in captivity.
Reasonable.
And
okay.
Especially these big, gentle killer whales.
Gentle.
You know, that haul people
gentle
under
killer.
And kill them, like in 2010, a woman lost her life.
Oh, yeah,
was dragged to the bottom. So, I don't know. Daisy, what do you think?
It sort of reminds me, sort of, but not really, of the GMO story we had on recently. Mm-hmm. You know, when your customers' desires change or their interests change, then the way you communicate about your product or display it changes as well. And, I mean, this could be an economics thing. You know, it just makes better sense for them to pull back on that.
That's what they're saying. There's in San Diego, because the clientele doesn't want to see that, they're going to pull back.
Right. Well, so in 2013, I went to SeaWorld. We visited California because my wife's brother is stationed out there, and we went out there. And to tell you the truth, the Orca show was underwhelming. I mean, the best show that I saw at SeaWorld was where they had rescue dogs and cats climbing stuff and jumping on stuff, but yet those dogs and cats were still there, still in quote-unquote captivity.
Yes. But they're domesticated.
So, well,
so we're not as uncomfortable with that, right?
Right.
I mean,
we're
living among us. Hey, I don't know. I mean, I don't know we could have packs of roving dogs. I mean, that's their natural environment,
that's
right?
Environment.
I mean, that's what it ought to be, right? I don't know.
If I'm allowed to shoot them, then go for it.
No,
I mean more than
but
that.
But what I'm saying is, so they've already made a change in response to a tragedy. You know, you've already mentioned the trainer that was killed, and I agree with that. So I do want to point this out, though, not to cast SeaWorld in a totally negative light, because whenever there's a whale that washes on shore, whenever there's a seal that's distressed, that's hurt, you know, they call SeaWorld. They call them, and they come get them, and they take them in, and they rehab them. And if they respond well, they do keep them in the park. And some of those animals may or may not be able to be introduced back in the wild. So I don't know the true story, but I know conservation is part of what's at the heart of what they do. And, of course, turning a profit is another part of what's at the heart of what
they do. Well, they're able to do the conservation they do because of the profit they turn, but they're motivated by the profit.
Right.
So I get that. And I'm not against the profit. I know Dr. Waddell's not against the profit.
Absolutely not.
I want
to make a profit ethically.
Right. I agree. No, I agree with what's been said here. I mean, SeaWorld's heritage is going to make it difficult for them to make that transition just because of where they came from. Even in the 70s, you know, when everybody was out rampaging, shooting or killing sharks because of Jaws, you know, things like that. And then you come back and see, hey, this is affecting ecology. You know, it's affecting the globe. And I'm not saying the world is going to decline because of the white, you know, whatever, great white shark killings.
Seas are going to rise and hurricanes are going to increase.
I'm not saying all of that. But I am saying there is something tragic about people thinking they just have to kill all the animals they can. That's not a good thing. But on the other hand, you know, we eat animals. That's what we do. So while I am with you on saying I don't really like the whole captivity thing all the time, and I think there's a shallowness to it that probably needs to be addressed at some point, I also think we've gone really soft or weird on how personified we've made animals, that we treat them as if they're human beings. That's not what you were saying.
No,
at all.
I agree with the tree huggers for different reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I wish the motivation and the foundation of the arguments that they give were slightly different. But yeah, I can agree with you on that. Okay, when we come back, we'll have some integrating ideas in just a moment.
Monophysitism, supralapsarianism. You might think these theological topics don't have a great deal to do with your spirituality. And to be honest, you might be right. But let me tell you some of the other things I've seen and learned while a student here at Criswell College. I've seen professors passionate about seeing the lost come to Christ, hitting the streets, and sharing their faith. I've learned firsthand that the Lord has arranged different members of His body in a way that pleases Him and is also a blessing to us. I've seen professors lead by example and humble themselves before others. And finally, I've learned that your theology absolutely does affect how well you love. So no matter your interests, whether they be ministry or theology, practical or philosophical, Criswell College is a great place to start. And who knows? Someday you might find the Ordo Salutis and the Hypostatic Union incredibly interesting topics. Find us at criswell.edu.
Criswell College people say, I care about the words of God because
they are my daily instruction.
You know, you think about the Bible, its impact upon history. If you're going to choose one book to live your life by, it will be that one.
I choose to believe them.
I value life because
God created it and He values it.
It seems to be one of the few things worth valuing.
Join the discussion as we talk about these topics from the studios at Criswell College every day right here.
Thousands of sermons, one single focus. WACriswell.com is the website set apart for the study of God's Word through this champion of the faith. Dr. W.A. Criswell served as senior pastor at the First Baptist Church of Dallas for a half century, and his legacy will live on for generations. Over 4,100 sermons are ready to hear on your schedule, and you can search by series, title, verse, and more. It's the Bible preached with passion, conviction, and belief. Log on anytime, WACriswell.com.
Welcome back. Here at Criswell College, we are all about making Christ known in our culture, and we have a blog to prove it. Go check it out at forchristandculture.com.
Okay, we've had a story about children beating up robots. Army Rangers, standards, maybe not changing, not sure. And then a story about whales and how they're handled in captivity, especially by SeaWorld. You can obviously look up all those stories online. Come to our website. You get a chance to look at it for Christ and Culture. I think we're starting with Jeff today. Okay. Give us a synthetic thought.
Sure. Well, my synthetic thought is congruence. I mean, I think that as we live in this world, we always see people trying to live for the world they want to be. And I think that's a noble thing to do. But you have to deal with the world that is as well. And I think in all three of these instances, we see people not dealing with the situation as it presents itself, and maybe even making assertions that don't exist based on what they want the world to be rather than what it is.
All right.
I'm thinking about founding an organization called People for the Ethical Treatment of People. And all of these articles really have something to do with, end up having to do with how we treat others, how we treat animals, how we treat other genders, how we treat robots. Yep. Really is going to imply how we treat other people a lot of times.
Oh, man, I wish we weren't so closely related. Yeah, so I'm instead of using the word others, I'm going to use the word standards.
Okay.
So, because we need standards when we're dealing with the other. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. The other. So objects like robots, humans like the other gender, other animals or whales. The standards, though, in my view, do reveal more about us than they reveal about the other. Hmm. So the point is what's inside of us when we're dealing with other people. And we got to teach our little children that it's good to treat others well. All right. Jeff Campbell, thanks for being on
Thank
the show.
You.
Joe Waddell, Daisy you. Reynolds, thanks for being on. I'm Barry Creamer, and I'll see you all next time.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to weigh in on the topic we've discussed, email us at forchristandculture@criswell.edu. We'd love to hear from you. Now get out there and change your world for Christ and Culture.